Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host on this live broadcast from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa this Thursday, December 19, 2024. The suspended Jonglei State Minister of Finance is locked up in his house in the capital Bor.
They blocked the road with the wood locks. They stole my car. They opened all my doors. They dragged my driver aside. They also dragged me out of the car.
And South Sudanese leaders say they are ready for polls in 2026.
We have been insisting that properly prepared elections, which are also preceded with proper trust-building exercises, can play a significant role in taking an exercise which can be very divisive and make it a nation-building exercise.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The suspended Minister of Finance in Jonglei State, Abraham Yuek, has been placed under house arrest. The Jonglei State Police Commissioner says the security forces acted on orders of the state governor. For VOA News, Dengai Deng reports from Juba.
Jonglei State Governor Maju Bieltruk suspended Abraham Yuek from his position as State Minister of Finance, Planning and Investment on December 17th. The suspension follows a vote of impeachment passed by the State Transitional Legislative Assembly in August 2022, citing Yuek's failure to address critical issues such as the delayed passage of the state budget and the non-payment of civil servant salaries. Yuek, who was on a private trip to Juba Wednesday, said he was caught off guard by the security forces who detained him at Malintor checkpoint. He says a joint security forces unit, including military intelligence, the National Security Service, and the police, disarmed his bodyguard, briefly detained him, and then forcefully took him to his residence in Bor, where he is now under house arrest.
They blocked the road with woodlocks. They stole my car. They opened all my doors. They dragged my driver aside. They also dragged me out of the car, holding my hand. I told them, Yajama, I'm a constituent post holder. You have no right to do this. You can talk to me respectfully. They would not listen. They even had some insults and tried to push me around. And at one point, one guy just slapped me on the back, and they took me to a courthouse.
Yuek says Jonglei state authorities have interfered with his freedom of movement as a private citizen after his suspension from office.
I'm supposed to go to Juba freely, like any citizen, using my own property, which is my privately owned vehicle. For them to stop me and say this car has to be investigated, I see as if they are acting out of law. Because if there is an investigation, it should not have been right now. It would have been done when this new governor came to office, if he felt like he wanted to investigate the nanny car and request all of that.
Major General John Bach, the Jonglei State Police Commissioner, says the security forces acted on orders of Governor Maju Biel to stop Yuek from leaving Bor because of an ongoing investigation into government-owned assets, including the vehicle he was using.
The investigation is conducted by the prosecutor. So for the police, we have nothing to do with that issue. What we have done is only the order of the government, and we are out of it. Now we are in for governor and legal
advice. Yuek appeared before the State Assembly 2 years ago, facing intense scrutiny over his handling of state finances. His impeachment, which had wide support from state lawmakers, prompted immediate action from the acting speaker, who urged the former governor, Dine Jok Chagur, to take action. However, Chagur did not act. On December 16, Speaker Amira Teny Allier wrote to the state governor, reminding him of the parliamentary resolution to suspend the finance minister for allegedly mismanagement and misappropriation of public funds, claiming it was retaliation for changes he made in the Ministry of Finance. Governor Majub told VOA Wednesday that he was implementing the decision of the lawmakers who are mandated to hold the executives accountable. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng in Juba.
Still in Juba, South Sudan is due to hold long-delayed general elections in December 2026. But will the country be ready? From Juba, Sheila Pony reports on the challenges facing the country as it prepares for the vote.
South Sudan has exactly 2 years to organize its national election, set to take place in December 2026. The vote was set for this month, but was delayed for a number of reasons, including the need for more time to complete a census, draft a permanent constitution, and register political parties. The postponement, first announced last June, extended the term of the current transitional government of national unity, headed by President Salva Kiir. Abednego Akok, head of South Sudan's National Electoral Commission, says in an exclusive interview with VOA that the political will must be present for the vote to be successful. He points out to the 2018 peace agreement that ended the country's civil war.
If we are serious, 2 years are enough for us to run the election.
He also noticed financial resources need be in place if the election is to be a success.
If they avail resources within this period, election can be conducted.
Last week, Nicholas Haysom, the head of the United Nations mission in South Sudan, known as UNMISS, warned that mismanaged elections could reignite violence and derail South Sudan's path to stability.
We have been insisting that properly prepared elections, which are also preceded with proper trust-building exercises, can play a significant role in taking an exercise which can be very divisive and make it a nation-building exercise so that the people come together recognizing that together they control the future of South Sudan and their fates are shared in the success of that enterprise.
South Sudan gained independence from Sudan in 2011. The country was set to hold its maiden election in 2015, but that failed to materialize following the outbreak of the civil war in 2013. President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar, Kiir's former vice president, had been locked in a power struggle, triggering fighting between forces loyal to both men. In 2018, Kiir and Machar signed the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, which was to culminate in elections this month. In June, however, President Kiir and Machar agreed to yet another extension, pushing the election to December 2026. Wani Yusuf is an eligible voter. He first cast his vote in the referendum which saw South Sudan secede from Sudan. He was 14 years old. He says he is looking forward to casting his first vote as an adult where he believes he will make an informed and independent decision in electing South Sudan's first ever democratically elected government. Yusuf, however, questions whether the 2026 vote will materialize.
When you look at the period that we spent postponing elections, it still tells you that if they cannot conduct elections in that time up to now, then there is also a high possibility that the election may not even take place within this two years' time.
Apart from budgetary constraints, the commission still needs to conduct a census and draw up electoral guidelines, which will take up to 17 months, according to the document outlining the delay in the vote. This process have not started because of a lack of a budget, according to Gabriel Deng, the Electoral Commission's deputy chairperson. Deng says there is a need for a political decision to address these challenges. Sheila Pony, VOA News.
Kenya's president says a mass livestock vaccination campaign will continue despite fears from some herders and farmers that the vaccine will somehow hurt their animals. Government officials say the campaign aims to ensure the country's livestock products are safe and meet international standards. Mohammed Yusuf reports for VOA from Nairobi.
Kenyan President William Ruto lashed out Tuesday at those objecting to a Ministry of Agriculture livestock vaccination program, which the minister says is aimed at blocking the spread of several livestock diseases. Critics have questioned the effectiveness of the vaccines, and some livestock farmers express concerns not backed by any evidence that the vaccine program is meant to sabotage their herds. Patrick Tarome is a livestock farmer in the Rift Valley region of Kenya. He says he will not allow his animals to be inoculated.
I will not vaccinate my animal because maybe I will be compromising the quality of my cows. With the fear, we don't know if somebody is trying to introduce a virus to the animals. So the rich will also will be able to afford the cure, but maybe the poor will not be able. So people will introduce poverty in Africa.
Ruto, speaking at a goat auction in Kenya's Baringo County, said the vaccinations will help Kenyan farmers make money and was critical of those who oppose them.
And I want to promise the people of Kenya that we are going to carry out this vaccination because our farmers deserve improved earnings. I want to ask leaders who have no knowledge, who have no understanding, who have no plan to spare us their ignorance.
According to the Minister of Agriculture and Livestock Development, the vaccine drive targets 22 million cattle and 50 million sheep and goats. The ministry has assured animal owners the vaccine is safe and are produced locally. Ruto say those against the vaccination of animals are preventing livestock owners from accessing international markets for their products.
Vaccination is about disease control. You cannot use disinformation and fake news to deny the people of Kenya international markets by discouraging disease control in Kenya.
Anthrax, foot and mouth disease, Rift Valley fever, Africa swine fever and rinderpest are some of the diseases that affect livestock in Kenya. According to the World Health Organization, animal vaccination help prevent and control the spread of the diseases. The Minister of Agriculture says so far only 10% of animals have been vaccinated. It says the vaccination rate needs to rise to 85% to make livestock products eligible for export. Some farmers and experts have blamed the government for the low uptake of vaccines, saying it failed to provide a clear message and allowed politicians to assume the roles of experts and veterinarians, which has fueled the false message about vaccines. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, illegal oil refineries in Nigeria make millions of dollars. Find out how after the break.
Hello, listener of South Sudan in Focus. We have an exciting new segment dubbed Words of Wisdom. We want to hear your thoughtful proverbs that echo through your community. This is another chance for you to share wisdom from your roots. All you need to do is record a proverb in a language of your choice, tell us its English translation and what it means. Keep it brief, authentic, and represent your community. Your recorded proverb shall be sampled on South Sudan in Focus every Wednesday. Send your recording via our WhatsApp number, +1 202 630 8011. That is +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Nigerian authorities in oil-rich Rivers State have unveiled six military-grade gun boats to help security agents battle the piracy and oil theft in the Niger Delta region for decades. The latest measures is part of a broader crackdown aiming at boosting Nigeria's oil production. Timothy Obiezu reports from Rivers State.
Local singers and dancers enthralled hundreds of delegates at the ceremony marking the handover of 6 military gunboats to Nigeria's Navy in Southern River State. It's the latest effort by state authorities to support a national crackdown on oil thieves and to check piracy along the waterways in the Niger Delta. Officials say the boats will bolster the Navy's ability to patrol and respond to threats, especially near submerged oil export pipelines, which are often prone to attacks by thieves. Siminalayi Fubara is the River State governor.
We're doing logistic support to Nigerian Navy, who are the closest agency that can battle the ones off the land. It's a big problem. The technology involved in the line, when you see them, you know that it's not small engineering, it's a professional. So,
Nigeria has long declared a war on crude oil theft, but the problem has continued to cut into the government's income and disrupt exports. Authorities estimate the country loses $10 billion every year, or the equivalent of about 200,000 barrels of oil per day, to illegal actors. Corruption, lack of security, and poor regulation have hindered authorities' ability to effectively curb the problem. Fubara says in addition to heightening security measures, state authorities will expand investments in infrastructure, healthcare, and education in local communities most prone to oil theft to dissuade them from the practice.
This problem is not just a problem that's attacking those people on the field and solve. What we need is a total reorientation. But you need to engage them.
The state-owned Nigerian National Petroleum Company said this week that 94 incidents of crude oil theft occurred between November 30 and December 6. On Thursday, the Nigerian military said its 90-day Operation Delta Safe, a program that aimed to reduce oil theft and increase production, was successful upon its conclusion in mid-October. Rear Admiral John Okeke is commander of the operation. He spoke to journalists.
We've been able to arrest and appropriate handling of over 300 vehicles comprising trucks, tankers, cars, tricycles, conveying crude oil and illegal products. Similarly, we've been able to handle over 15 million liters of stolen crude oil and about 4 million liters of illegal refined automotive gasoline oil.
Authorities say Nigeria plans to use drones, automated metering systems, and other technology to monitor its oil pipelines next year. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
From Abuja, Nigeria, we go to the Democratic Republic of Congo, where in the city of Goma, a group of Congolese journalists are battling medical misinformation that could have tragic consequences. Reporter Zanim Netizaidi has this report from Goma, the Democratic Republic of Congo.
These journalists working in Goma are fighting a flood of false information about war and disease in a region plagued by conflict and health care challenges. Fact checkers at the Congolese publication Eleza Fact fight misinformation, like the myth that mpox, previously called monkeypox, doesn't exist and is merely scabies. Aline Kataliko says their work is vital to public health and building trust.
There are rumors about monkeypox that say, for example, that the vaccine is aimed at the extermination of the Congolese. We are already observing the dangers of these rumors as they can harm the whole community and prevent the disease from being eradicated.
Since 2021, the 25 journalists at Eleza Fact, including Joel Alimasi Kitambala, have been raising awareness about the dangers of misinformation.
In a conjonction de mots-clés, à chaque fois qu'il y a une publication qui mentionne ces mots-clés-là, nous avons des notifications sur toutes les publications concernant ces mots-clés. Et nous partageons ces publications avec la rédaction, toutes les éditeurs, la publication, du moins l'information, mérite d'être vérifiée.
ELEZA Facts articles are published on their websites, shared on social media and broadcasts via local radio stations to reach those without internet access. A lot of the misinformation involves medical conspiracies similar to the one about mpox. Journalist Joylene Kazimoto reported on misinformation about COVID-19 in these podcasts.
À Kinshasa, la ville où j'habite, j'ai constaté une réticence et une inconscience catégorique de la population dans la lutte contre le COVID-19, car beaucoup sont ceux qui ne croient pas à l'existence de cette maladie. Les plus dubitatifs s'y trouvent dans le périphérique.
Editor Daniel Makeke says these efforts are important in combating disinformation.
Nous sommes en collaboration avec certaines radios communautaires
radio
parce que nous faisons aussi une production de podcasts. La radio fait le relais de ces podcasts qui sensibilise cette population-là
sur
la maladie, l'épidémie et comment, par exemple, se faire traiter.
Et
quelle est la vérité derrière le traitement, par exemple, du mpox ou l'origine du mpox?
Makeke says ELEZA Fact Project's efforts help prevent the spread of false news, which can have harmful consequences. Zane Mnetizaidi, VOA Africa, Goma, Democratic Republic of Congo.
From Goma, we go to Chad, where Electoral Commission has asked the Central Africa State's military to help protect election officials and candidates amid spike in attacks on campaign teams ahead of the December 29 elections. While no shooting have been reported, witnesses say opposition supporters have used clubs and iron bars to prevent the ruling MP's party from holding rallies in several cities and towns. Moki Edwin Kinzika reports from neighboring Cameroon.
The National Election Management Agency in Chad, known as ANGE, says campaigning for the December 29 parliamentary, local council and regional elections has been plagued by attempts to disrupt rallies and by attacks on candidates and elections officials. Chadian officials say the elections will mark an end to the Central African State's three-year so-called transitional period following the April 2021 death of former longtime president Idriss Deby Itno. Hassan Bayria is ANGE vice president.
L'Agence nationale de gestion des élections sollicite votre contrôle.
Bayra says the elections management body she represents this week officially requested Chad's military to be deployed to try to protect civilians, candidates, officials, and national and international observers before, during, and after the nation's December 29 elections. She says ongoing tensions may degenerate into armed conflicts if Chad's military fails to deploy troops to protect campaign caravans and candidates representing political parties taking part in the polls. ANGE says more than 8.3 million of Chad's about 18 million civilians have registered to vote. About 180 political parties have put forward nearly 1,300 candidates to compete in the country's parliamentary elections alone, with several thousand others to take part in local council and provincial elections, according to Chad's government. More than 1,000 election observers have been accredited for the polls. However, a coalition of over 75 opposition parties and civil society groups described the planned polls as a masquerade, saying that Chadian President Mahamat Idriss Deby and his Patriotic Salvation Movement, or MPS, are planning to use the polls to consolidate their grip on power. Opposition and civil society groups say their supporters this week used clubs and iron bars to attack MPS campaign caravans in several towns, including Djamena, Bongor, Abeche, Lai, and Mundu. In other areas, the military says it has dismantled roadblocks set up by opposition parties to prevent MPS campaigners from entering towns. Avuksuma Jonah, president of Chad's Party of Democrats, says his supporters have been blocking campaigners from both MPS and the opposition from holding election rallies.
Vous avez l'ange avec sa structure. Vous avez...
Avuksuma says his party wants elections to be postponed because all the officials of Chad's elections management body are appointed by Deby, who rules with an iron fist and is not ready to make Chad a democratic state. He says Deby controls Chad's constitutional court and has instructed officials of the court to declare his party victorious in all elections. Ange organizes elections and declares provisional results according to Chad's laws. The country's constitutional court declares final results. Deby appoints officials to both institutions. Deby told State TV this week that elections for Chad to fully return to civilian rule will be fair and transparent. Opposition groups quickly dismissed that claim, saying the Chadian leader wants to rig the polls to ensure control of parliament. Deby became Chad's transitional president in April 2021 after his father, Idris Deby Itno, was killed in a gun battle with rebels following 30 years in power. He promised an 18-month transition to civilian rule, but extended it by 2 years. Deby won Chad's contested May 6 presidential polls, which many opposition parties boycotted, asserting that Deby wanted at all costs to continue his late father's rule. Moki Edwin Kinzuka, VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that's all we had on our menu for this Thursday, December 19, 2024. We now leave you with the song Full Stop by Khadija Kopa. This one is Taarab from the coastal town of Kenya. Listening to Khadija Kopa and the song Full Stop. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Saida Hamdun, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.